Welcome to We're Talking Sports. K-Word Sports Talk with Jeff, Tim, and Dave. I'm Jeff.
I'm David.
And we're here bringing you the latest and greatest in professional collegiate sports action. I was trying to think of if there are any other divisions that we care about. Just to recap, I mean, we haven't been here in a really long time. Starting with spring break, that Friday, we didn't do the show. And then the next week, we didn't do the show again because it was still spring break. And actually, that Friday, I was driving up to Wheaton, Illinois. And that was for the men's. So both the men and women, obviously, for WashU basketball, made it to the Sweet 16, which was tremendous. The women played in Bloomington, Indiana, against at the home of Illinois Wesleyan, who was at the time...
Bloomington, Illinois,
correct. You're right. Bloomington, Illinois. I screwed up.
You're good, bro.
Illinois Wesleyan at the time was the number one team in the nation, undefeated number one team in the nation. So I went to the men's game, though. That was in Wheaton, Illinois. And that was where Wheaton, who was the number three ranked team, although they were number three according to the Division III top 25 poll, but they were actually number one according to the way the NCAA ranks them in the Midwest Division. So Wheaton was also favored by many to win the national title. But I went with the men's team. The men defeated Wheaton 55-52 in Wheaton's own home court in front of 2,600 Wheaton fans. Amazing. That was a couple Fridays ago. And then the next day, knock off number one, undefeated in the nation, St. Thomas, University of St. Thomas, the Tommies. And that's how the men got to go to the Final Four this past weekend, which was in Salem.
And it was great because, you see, WashU faced adversity in the first three rounds of the tournament because the region was just so stacked. You know, the first three games, I think that their combined differential was either 8 or 7 points. I think it was 7 points.
It was eight points.
Okay.
You were right the first time.
Two differentials of 3 points and one of two.
Yeah.
I mean, that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
For the first three rounds. I mean, they could have conceivably lost in the first round.
Yeah.
And then once they got through that stretch, you know, they play St. Thomas, and they won big against St. Thomas to get to the Final Four, you know.
Exactly. I mean, the men got placed in what they call the bracket of death. The way Division III does it is... rather than in Division One, it's kind of done in as fair a way as possible. They go by seedings, by RPI, whatever. In Division Three, they pretty much just go by transportation costs. So the bottom left quarter of the bracket, if you're trying to visualize it in front of you, featured the top seven teams in the Division Three top 25 poll heading into the NCAA tournament. That's incredible. So the men in the first round took on number 20-seeded Lawrence College, and won. They were down by one with 19 seconds to go, and then with 12 seconds, Aaron Thompson drained a 25-footer from the top of the key to give WashU the win there. Then they beat University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. We're up by 18 before losing the lead. It whittled to one, and then WashU prevailed there. That's how they entered Wheaton. Beat Wheaton by three, 55-52. That was, many people thought they'd win the title, and that was in Wheaton's own home gym. And then the next day took down, again, St. Thomas. And, yeah, they did win by 15. As the score was 79-64. They were trailing by 8 at halftime. And St. Thomas just was such a physical team and so quick. And they pressed in a way that really Coach Edwards of WashU's coach, Coach Edwards, said he'd never seen a defense that fast.
Yeah, and I remember listening to the broadcast, and I was just getting upset because I was like, why can't they break the press? Why don't they get more people back there? But I obviously didn't see what was going on there. And when you're playing a team that went 27-0 in the regular season, then you're up for a dogfight. I mean, it's not going to be easy regardless. So they really excelled there. They get to the Final Four. I believe they played Guilford in the first bracket. And Guilford, what, they were like ranked. Were they even ranked?
Yeah, they were ranked number 23. But honestly, well, when you look at Sean Wallace, the WashU senior point guard, he was quoted as saying, I didn't even think we'd... Like, when I looked at the bracket originally, I was like, maybe we can win a game. The bracket of death was so hard. But the winners came out of it, and you had four teams in the Final Four were WashU, Guilford, Richard Stockton, and Franklin and Marshall. And... honestly, when you look at it, those teams were not the four best teams in the nation. The four best teams were WashU, Wheaton, and St. Thomas were without a doubt, the top three teams in the nation, and only one of them could prevail to the Final Four. And from there, honestly, there was very little competition for the Bears in Salem.
And you're right. And I think, how do you think the UAA prepared WashU for this? I mean, do you think that, you know, we always talk about the UAA as being such a strong conference, a lot of parity. The competition, if you don't play well, then you're not going to win. How do you think that that translated to their tournament progression?
I think that's interesting because the UAA this year had a really, really, really horrendous year. The Massey ratings is the Division III rating system by which you look at a different conference and you see they stack them up somehow and they rank them. So UAA is always first in the Massey ratings. You always see that in the game notes before the game. The UAA was fourth in the Massey ratings this year, falling behind several much smaller conferences just by the nature of the fact that a lot of teams had off years. University of Chicago came in ranked and ended up, I think they went 4-19 on the season, which is an atrocity. You had schools like Rochester, who are perennial powerhouses. Last year, Rochester and Brandeis were both ranked number one at a certain time. NYU was top 10, and none of those teams were even ranked this year. The only other team besides WashU in the UAA to be ranked was Carnegie Mellon. So I don't know how well the UAA prepared the Bears for this. I think WashU benefited a lot early on in the season, had a lot of close games, a lot of overtime games that were able to pull out and win. One against Augustana, Aurora. These different games, I think, prepared this team. But really, this team was a championship team last year. Now they've defended their national title. They knew what it took. And they just WashU, honestly, was such a superior team to anyone besides Wheaton and St. Thomas that I don't think the UAA preparation even mattered. I just think WashU went into the playoffs and got lucky a couple times against Lawrence that if AT misses that shot, WashU loses in the first round. It was possible. Against Whitewater, gap closes to one. If things go, ball rolls the other way, WashU loses there. Against Wheaton, a couple shots miss from Kent Raymond of Wheaton, from Ben Panner. If Aaron Thompson doesn't, if Tyler Nading doesn't score, Aaron Thompson, you know, lose there. But all the way up until the Final Four, WashU just kept prevailing through close games, and that's really what the Bears did all season.
And then the Final Four, it's kind of a cakewalk, especially Richard Stockton. You saw that the game was pretty much over.
It was horrible. Honestly, it was not a fun Final Four. It was fun to be there.
It was fun to watch. Yeah, watch on my live feed. I was freaking out. I was with a group of friends, and we were looking all around. I didn't have CBS College, so I was like, "Oh my god! Like, how am I gonna get this game?" So I was listening to your broadcast, and then finally found NCAA.com. Had to click like five different links, but finally, you know, got the live feed. It was good HD.
And then you turned off my broadcast.
Yes. No, but I kept it on though. Kept it on. Just turned the volume down. Then as soon as it was over, I turned your volume up.
Yeah.
Listened to the post game. So it was good.
Yeah. No, but in the Final Four, there was very little competition. Guilford was down early against the Bears and then cut the gap to 46-41 at a point. And Sean Wallace just went off. He went on a personal 11-0 run for the Bears. And he hadn't even scored up to that point, really. I think he had 3 points up until then. He's a distributor when he wants to be, and he's a scorer when he wants to be. And that's why he was the NCAA Final Four MVP.
Now I have the
second team All-American.
I have the esteemed privilege of having two classes with Sean Wallace.
Wow, you are a lucky guy.
So I'm lucky. So we're both in Israeli politics with him, and
right.
I walked up to him. You know, he doesn't know me. I just tapped him on the shoulder. I was like, "Hey, man, congratulations! Like, you deserved it and everything." And then he's in my sports management class, and of course we have Aaron Thompson's in that. Ross Kelly. I think a couple other players, I just don't know the names, they're in the class as well. So the teacher, he just said before anything, as soon as, you know, when we had class after they won, he's like, "Let's just give a hand to the men's basketball
team." Wow, that's
cool. We all clap. There's like 70, 80 of us.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, they deserve it.
They definitely deserve it. And, yeah, they, again, went into a Final Four. And looking at the rankings for the final rankings that were made after the Final Four, so you got WashU, unanimous first place, 25 first place votes. Next is Wheaton. Next to St. Thomas. Again, these teams, Wheaton lost in the Sweet 16. That's just how it works. When you're talking about the bracket of death again, St. Thomas had to play University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point in the second round. That was number one versus number four. And they end up actually ranked third and fourth in the nation. So the fourth best team lost in the second round of the tournament. Richard Stockton ends up ranked fifth. So they made the title game. Normally, you'd like to see number one versus number two in the finals. I'm saying that's just not what happened. It was number one versus number two in the Sweet 16. Richard Stockton, number 5. Franklin and Marshall was finished the season ranked 11th. And Guilford finished the season ranked 8th. So the final four was 1, 5, 8, and 11 when you look at the final rankings. That's just not – I mean, Division III, I think, should do something to fix that, to be honest, because WashU rolled over Richard Stockton. There were a couple times that Stockton cut the lead to 8 in the second half. But even at those times, you could tell that WashU was going to win that game. They were just a better team all around.
I wasn't nervous for 1 second.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't either. Not a second. Even before the teams got on the court, Richard Stockton, a very athletic team, kind of actually plays kind of like St. Thomas did with the athleticism. But WashU was just prepared for that, and had already played. Tremendous coach in Coach Edwards. Assistant coach, Coach Whittle, is one of the best scouting apparently one of the best scouters in all of basketball, let alone Division III. And he just has such intricate game plans. Everyone on the team knows what they're supposed to do. Sean Wallace won't get flustered. He just won't. He dropped 16 and 10 in the championship game. Aaron Thompson scored 30 points against Guilford. He was first-team All-American. He might even be Player of the Year next year. WashU is the prohibitive favorite to win it again. It's tremendous, tremendous time to be a Bears fan, really.
It is tremendous.
And actually, looking forward to next year, again, we're still talking about the men's basketball team who won the title this past weekend against Richard Stockton. Looking forward to next year. Sean Wallace is a senior, okay?
He's an academic senior.
Academic senior, but last year he took the year off because he got injured. So he's right now currently debating whether he should come back or not.
One more year, Sean Wallace.
Exactly.
One more year.
And the one more year chance began as soon as the Bears won the title.
Oh, that would be incredible.
Like, can you imagine another year of Sean Wallace? The Bears would be number one.
We wouldn't. Okay, we'd probably lose a game because it's not that easy to go through an entire season undefeated. But, I mean, I can't imagine any team beating us in the playoffs. I just can't, especially with Aaron Thompson. Now, this is something that you didn't hear because you were doing your broadcast, but I heard from the D3 broadcast or the CBS College broadcast of the game,
yeah,
people were just talking about Aaron Thompson and his stroke, and like coaches have never seen such a just perfect stroke, as shooting stroke as Aaron Thompson. And this is a guy who I don't really know how the scouting works, but this is a guy who conceivably could play pro ball somewhere.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, I'm not saying the NBA, but
you're saying.
I'm saying somewhere.
Same with Sean Wallace, really, but AT, 49% from downtown for the season. He went 8 of 12 in the game against Guilford.
That's absurd. That is absurd.
And more than half the shots are three-pointers. And all he needs is like a half a second. He comes off a screen, curls out to the top of the key, and just, you give him any space, and he's going to drill it. Great.
Wow.
Great to be a Bears fan.
And we thought we had it nice with Troy Ruth, and it just keeps getting the gift that just keeps on giving us, WashU men's basketball.
And if you're going to go Division III, if you want to focus on studies and you want to still play basketball at a high-level program, are you not going to go to the two-time defending national champion, Washington University Bears?
We're building a dynasty here.
I think we're building a dynasty. On that note, again, a quick public service announcement.
After destroying TV and radio, mega media corporations want to become gatekeepers to the internet. They're scheming to control what content you can view and which services you can use online. Streaming video, internet phones, podcasting, and online games are the future of the internet. But companies like Verizon, AT&T, and Comcast want Congress to let them deliver only their products at super high speeds while sticking the rest of us in the slow lane. This predatory scheme would be a dead end for independent voices and internet innovators, bloggers, producers, and any new channels and services that might compete with the conglomerates. The only way to stop them is to raise hell right now. Tell the CEOs, hands off our internet. This is an ad brought to you by KWR and the Ad Council.
Again, you're listening to KWUR 90.3 FM here in Clayton, Missouri. This is We're Talking Sports with Jeff, Tim, and Dave. Tim, again, where is Tim?
Tim's in Las Vegas, the NSBE, National Society for Black Engineers.
Where's the S come in?
Society. There you go. But NSBE, they're doing their annual conference. It happens to be in Las Vegas, and Tim is 21. He can do all the gambling that he wants to do. So so more powers to him.
And I think prostitution's legal in Las Vegas, isn't it?
Yeah, but hey.
I don't think Tim would be
No, Tim would not be indulging.
Not our Tim. Again, we're recapping a little bit the Bears basketball seasons. WashU men going into Salem, Virginia and coming home with the trophy, and it was not even close. It wasn't close. And they're going to, again, go at it next year when the only graduating players, Tyler Nading, the senior, and the third leading scorer in Bears history, all-time steals leader. This guy, and what he doesn't put on the stat sheet, he just leaves out on the court. After the Guilford game in the Final Four, Coach Edwards said, Tyler did everything tonight except blow the whistle. It was really a great quote. And Tyler in that game was only 4 of 10, 8 points, a couple rebounds, but he was everywhere. And he's such a leader. But we're losing Tyler and might lose Sean Wallace. Again, that's still up in the air. He's pulling a Brett Favre. He's going to make us wait a little bit.
He's going to go to his farm in Mississippi and mull things over with his Wrangler jeans on.
Right. And Ross Kelly's the Aaron Rodgers of this situation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Ross Kelly, I feel bad for this kid.
I mean, you got to feel bad for Ross Kelly.
He's a junior. He's going to be a senior. This should be his year that he's going to shine. You know, he was a point guard for the first championship.
When Sean Wallace was injured, Ross Kelly came in and was the starting point guard for the national championship team. And now Sean Wallace comes back, and Ross Kelly gets very limited playing time.
It sounds like something like would happen in Friday Night Lights, you know, TV show or the movie, you know, the
Sean
underdog,
Wallace, the popular jock.
Yeah. The underdog steps in for the injured popular jock, but then the jock comes back, and then, oh man. I just feel bad for the kid. But, you know, I think maybe both could start. I don't know what type. They're both kind of natural point guards, but you've seen it before where you have, you know, you play your best players. That's just what you do as a basketball coach, and you can find somewhere for them on the court, you know, if they can play.
Exactly.
So,
honestly, they wouldn't start both Wallace and Kelly just because the way the lineup's shaping up, two freshmen came in this year and really surprised a lot of people, and that just means the next 3 years are going to be great. But Dylan Richter, a freshman, he's a 6'3". He's either going to be a two guard or a three in the next couple of years. And then Alex Toth, who is going to be either a power forward or a center in the next couple of years. And these two players, they're going to get playing time, a ton of playing time next year. So you're going to have Thompson's back, obviously starting two guard. He's just going to be. Cam Smith is back, and while he doesn't put up the offensive numbers, he's the best defensive player on the team, and he just shuts down the best player on the other team. Whether Wallace comes back, you got Ross Kelly, you got Zach Kelly coming back. You got Alex Toth. You got Richter, you got Caleb Knepper off the bench. John Wolf made significant contributions in the playoffs. Anyway, I want to also talk about the women.
Now, the women made it just as far as the men, got to the championship game in Hope, or at Hope College in Holland, Michigan, and just didn't work out. They made a great run. I mean, Tim and I were talking last week. You know, we did not know how this team would perform. I mean, they didn't really do too well the beginning of the year. So, you know, they're kind of hovering around, I believe, you know, around 25 and being unranked for the first half of the year.
Of the rankings, yeah.
So, I was very proud of just how they got it all together. They had a lot of veterans, you know, Jill Brandt, Jimmy McFarlane, point guard. It's a point guard.
Chanelet Dakinai, Halsey Ward. Those are the four main seniors.
Yeah, and then like Zoe Onra, and like they have a lot of veteran, you know, junior and senior leadership. But you know so it was great when they made this run. You know, making it all the way to the championship game. You can't be too mad at that. I mean, we're just kind of we're spoiled. You know, we're like
spoiled here.
I mean, when I heard that Tim sent me a text and heard that they both made it to the championship game, I was like, oh my God, this is
incredible. The first time in Division III history that a school sends both the men's and women's team to the championship in the same year?
No,
I mean, do you know that 2 years ago, both the men's and women's team both made the Final Four also? The women took second, the men took third. This year, the men take first, women take second again. Incredible.
And, I mean, what was the score of the final game?
So it was 60-53, losing to George Fox, who was... They were just the best team in the country, undefeated throughout the nation. They had a player who's 6'4", who was just dominant in the middle. They made all the three-pointers. They made 13 three-pointers in the semifinal game, which was an NCAA Division III record. George Fox was an incredible team, and the Bears were down by 14 in the second half. Cut it to one. In the final minute, cut it to one. Jill Brandt steals it, throws the ball to Halsey Ward. Three-pointer goes in and out. But the women almost put together an amazing run, and I mean, number five ranked in the nation heading into the tournament, and defeated Illinois Wesleyan, who was the number one team, undefeated. Everyone thought they were by far the best team. Wash U proved that wrong with a 58-53 win, getting out to an early lead, almost losing it, but still, it was a win's a win. Beating Illinois Wesleyan, beating Amherst 65-49 in the semis, and then, again, falling to George Fox, but the women put together a phenomenal run also, and I don't know. It's the week after it happened, and I'm still kind of shell-shocked by it all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the trip to Salem was just a memorable experience, something that I regret once again not going. I was sitting here, you know, watching some of the D1 tournament stuff, and it was good and everything, but I much would have rather have seen the Salem game. You know, we had our setup. I had my computer set up, my friends over, and we were watching the NCAA.com, and we had the D1 tournament on. It was on our TV, but it was just on mute, and no one was watching it because no one really cared.
Yeah.
You know, this is my school. I mean, exactly. I'm mad at myself. I'm really upset.
Yeah.
I was talking about it for the longest time. I'm like, I'm going to go to Salem. You know, I have a friend at Roanoke. You know, we're going to hang out.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out. So,
yeah.
I'm just going to hope that's going to happen next year because it probably will.
It probably will. Either Salem or actually the women's tournament's moving to Bloomington, Illinois, which is only 2 hours north of here. So that's a much more feasible trip than a 16-hour bus ride to Salem.
It was 16 hours?
I don't know how long it was. We left at 10 o'clock Thursday night and got in at 2 p.m. on Friday.
Wow, that is...
It was intense. That's a while to ride the bus.
That's ridiculous.
It's a really long time. But it was... I mean, we came home with the trophy.
And that's all that matters.
The games were anticlimactic, I'll be honest. Having been in Wheaton, having seen the top three teams in the nation battling it out and Wash U prevailing, that was kind of like the Final Four a little more. But this Final Four was great, and the championship's great. And the women coming in second is excellent. And the women have 11 players that they rotate through, pretty much 11 players that play. Now, four of them are gone, but that leaves seven. And this is a team that's been to the championship game, and they know how to win. Next year is going to be another phenomenal year to be a Wash U Bears basketball fan. There's no chance it won't be.
I trust Coach Edwards and Coach Fahey. I trust their decision-making. I mean, they've been here for a long time, and they've established themselves as just one of the mainstays in Division III basketball and college basketball in general. So I see good things upon the horizon for the next few years. You know, even when we're gone, I still think Wash U basketball will be a force.
Now this is brings us back to the perennial, the daily, the weekly question: how do we get people to start caring? Because we won the title. And I was talking with Chris Mitchell, the sports information director in Salem, on the day that the women and men were both in the championship game. And he said, man, could you imagine if the men and women both win today? Can you imagine how much the campus will be partying? And I was thinking, like, you know, Chris, it sounds like you're a little – I don't know if we would be partying because I don't know if people care. And I don't understand why can't we get people to care? Because I feel like this is awesome. And I've really become a diehard D3 fan, maybe from going to all the games. But I really think that we have something special, at least in terms of the basketball program.
And I was back here. I was back here when it happened. And we were like, yes, yes, that's great. Because we cared. You know, we cared about Wash U basketball. But no one was, I at least on my part, I don't remember any parties being thrown about Wash U men winning at all. You know, I imagine... You know, when my school wins the championship, I imagine, you know, everyone's celebrating in the streets.
Riot.
It's kind of like when, no, this is not meant to be political talk, but it's when Obama won the presidential election. A lot of people, that was a huge historical event for a lot of people. And, you know, people were telling me how people were in the streets, you know, grown adults were in the streets celebrating. And, you know, I imagine that kind of thing happening. You know, you see in D1 sports, that kind of thing happens. And, you know, people throw the parties, and especially what I imagine is, like, the bus comes back. Whenever it comes back, you know, people tell when the bus is coming back, and everyone's just around the bus just clapping. And
exactly.
You know, that's just what I was imagining, and I wish we kind of had that. But at the same time, I don't know how realistic it would be to get everyone sort of out of this mindset that Wash U doesn't really have good sports. And it's kind of a hard thing, mindset, to get out of.
How do we do it? I'm trying to think. I mean, we've thrown around the idea of tailgates at football games. And it would be better if the football team, if the football team were like a top five ranked team in the nation.
Yeah,
like
it would be better.
The men's and women's basketball teams are. I think it would be easier.
If they were like
football is easy to get behind,
right?
But in terms of basketball, there's so many games. I don't know. We got to start a riot. This is how Wash U and Emory started this rivalry, is because people were wondering, like, why can't we care more about sports? So Wash U and Emory, you've heard about this story, right?
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
About how they fabricated, pretty much fabricated a rivalry and just. Said some things about each other's schools just to get people involved. If we had a rival that we could rally maybe our season around going to this game, the rivalry game, I don't know. There has to be some way to get people behind this because next year is going to be another phenomenal year. My only concern is that people go to basketball games and we're going to blow the opponents out because a lot of the games are close, especially within the UAA. But Wash U is going to be favored to win probably every game they play next year.
Yeah, so maybe it takes us more, you know, flying around campus. Maybe we can talk about our K-Word Sports Talk a little bit more. You know, you never know. But this is going to keep going on. The athletics are going to keep going on, and I want as many students here to take advantage of just how good we really are. You see how much these guys work. You know, I played on the football team for a year. And, you know, I saw first person just how much these guys care, how hard they work. It's, you know, it's not even a matter of they're not as talented, because some of them really are. You know, people just don't know. And once they see, once you get a little taste of the athletics, it's contagious. I mean, you see just like the passion that they put into the game. And that's what I love about amateur sports in general. When you look at college football, college basketball on a higher level, you just see the passion. You see how much they love what they're doing. And hopefully, I don't know what we can do. We always talk about this, but I just hope we can work something out where, you know, more people care. Just build that momentum, and just it becomes a snowball effect. You get them going to the first game.
Let's start it.
We got to, man.
And baseball teams in season now. I mean, there's a ton of sports going on.
Tracks in season. You know, I'm going to a meet in, you know, at about 4 o'clock.
Are you?
Today, yeah.
Is that on campus here?
Yeah, Francis Field. I have a friend that throws, and there are a lot of the sprinters are really good. I'm really, everyone's pretty good. You know, I have a friend that does steeplechase too. So, I mean, everyone knows somebody that plays sports. It's one thing you just support your friend, but it's another thing to see just how good these people are. And hopefully we can just build something up. Yep. I don't know.
Again, you're listening to K-Word Sports Talk. We're talking sports, 90.3 FM, Clayton, Missouri. This is K-Word Radio, K-W-U-R Radio. And please do email us, because I love questions.
I love questions.
we love questions. That's the definition of each of us individually loving questions. Send us an email at kwersportstalk@gmail.com. Again, email kwersportstalk, that's K-W-U-R sports talk, T-A-L-K, @gmail.com, kwersportstalk@gmail.com, and we'll answer your questions live on the air, whether they're pertinent to Division III basketball or Division I basketball or really any sport. Or anything in general.
We can talk about tennis, whatever.
Talk about minerals and rocks.
Okay. Or you can call us at 314-935-KWER. That's 314-935-5987. You know, we love you calling in. We'll keep you on for a little bit. We can talk about whatever. It's just me and Jeff here. Tim's in Vegas, so we're kind of jealous of him. So we want you to bounce some questions off of us. That'll make us feel a little bit better. But, yeah. Now, I wanted to jump in to the Division I.
Yeah,
the whole
Division I thing kind of skipped my mind for a while. I've been really focused on Division III, but let's talk about this Division I stuff, that whatever's going on. You know how much it really just went so over my head that my bracket, I was ranked in the 1.3 percentile after the first round,
and that's bad. Just for anyone,
yeah,
who's
yeah, that's not good.
That's not the top 1.3. That's the bottom 1.3.
Like, take 98.7 and reverse that, and that's what I was. It was the bottom 1.3 percentile, and three of my four games go south yesterday.
Now, can you tell me who your top advisor was in picking your bracket? It was someone that's pretty important.
So I wasn't even going to fill out a bracket this year. That's how little I knew. And then I was sitting in class one day. I'm not going to say which class, but I was browsing the internet in class, and go to ESPN.com, and it says, Barack Obama's bracket So I say, I wonder who he picked. And I say, if Obama can make picks, then I can make picks. And I can make picks exactly like Obama makes picks. So I pretty much copied our president because I figure that he probably can't be wrong very often.
His first round was awful. I think he's doing better now.
That's why I was 1.3%. I think he had a rough day yesterday, if my bracket's any indication.
Yeah. The funny thing about Obama's bracket, now this is on TV all day, and he was really it seemed like he was really into it and making educated decisions, and he probably was, or he was trying his best. But the funny thing that I get out of that is Mike Krzyzewski, the coach for Duke, he comes out with a statement. Now, Obama didn't pick Duke to go to the Final Four. I think he picked them to get upset in the Sweet 16 or something like that. And Coach K says sort of an off-the-cuff comment. It's basically like, he should be worrying about the economy. He shouldn't be worrying about college basketball.
Yeah.
And it was pretty funny, actually.
Yeah.
Usually, I don't like Coach K. I'm a UNC guy, and think he's kind of contradicting sometimes. Obviously, he's one of the best coaches, probably the best coach in college basketball, not named Mark Edwards. But, I mean,
and Coach of the Year, by the way, Mark Edwards. So.
Yeah, but I mean,
cheers to that.
Coach May is kind of it's kind of a funny point because Barack Obama, he's got a lot more interesting things to do. I know he likes to sort of infuse a little bit of sports in his job, but it's kind of funny that Coach K called him out, and then he quickly apologized, saying his quotes were taken out of context, even though that was, like, his quote. That's all he said. Like, how can it be taken out of context when that's what he said?
That I don't get. The whole quote out of context, that's, like, the most overused excuse ever. No, if you said a quote...
And it wasn't out of context, because that was the context. Like, that was the single quote.
Yeah.
Maybe he should worry about the economy.
What you mean is that people are overplaying it. That's what people mean a lot of the times, I think, is that it's kind of off the cuff, as you said.
Yeah.
But Obama loves sports and made these picks, and they weren't very good. Now we're there.
No, so I'm glad that he knows what he's doing, or I hope he knows what he's doing in politics, because he should stick to that, stick to his day job.
Well, actually, he's been very concerned about sports. I know he got a lot of criticism and support for his criticism of the BCS bowl system in college football, but that's actually now being brought to legislation in Congress. So, maybe Washington can help the college football system.
You know, if something happens out of that, I guess I'd be happy. But they really do not. Politics and sports should not mix. There's, like, no need for that. There's so many more important things. And I'm a sports fan. I would love for the BCS to just be obliterated, sent to the moon. But there are other ways of doing that. Politics and sports. It's not a good. It's not a good mix.
Sports is so pure. Why ruin it? Why soil it? Soil its proverbial diaper. For some reason, that image went through my head.
Thank you for that.
Let's talk about these Division I games a little bit. Last night, it is the Sweet 16, or it was the Sweet 16. Couple games, UConn versus Purdue, Xavier versus Pittsburgh, Missouri versus Memphis, and Villanova versus Duke. Again, all eight of these teams looking for four spots within the Elite Eight, the other games to be played today. First, let's talk about Purdue-UConn. Dave, obviously a big Division I basketball fan. UConn prevailing in that 72-60. I actually had Purdue winning this game. That was my only upset I picked the whole bracket, and I got shut down hard.
Now, that game is a contrasting styles, because Purdue's kind of fast, and they're very good on defense. You know, they played them tough for about the first, I'd say, 30 minutes, and then UConn, eventually, their talent prevailed. Guys like Kashim Thabeet, especially. Purdue didn't have a guy like that on their team. But
7'3".
Yeah, he's a beast.
From Tanzania.
And he's a guy who's probably going to get picked second in the draft.
Is he supposed to be a good pro?
We'll see about that. He's basically, his potential is astronomical. Like, it's out of this world. But I don't know. He doesn't have he's still pretty raw. Because let's put it like this. His freshman year, he was barely a basketball player. He was just like a 7'3" kid who could block shots. He had no offensive skill. And even now, his offensive skill is pretty limited. When you look at his post game, it's one or two moves. His hands aren't that great. But he's a defensive presence. He can rebound. And occasionally, when he's on, he'll go for like 25 points and 12 rebounds, like 5 blocks.
Yeah.
So
he's like an Emeka Okafor, but like tall.
Oh, but he's got his potential so much more than Emeka Okafor. He kind of topped out after, you know, once he got to his like senior year. Emeka Okafor was never, or junior year, his potential, his talent was never going to get much better. So, you know, Okafor is always going to be like a solid player, but he can never be that great big man. Thabeet can be, I don't think he'll be as good as Dwight Howard, but he could be one of the better big men around. You know, maybe like a, he could be better than Greg Oden. I'll put it like that.
Well, so, yeah, Greg Oden, obviously a lot of potential still.
Yeah.
Yet to see. So UConn does beat Purdue. They're going to go on in the next round to face the winner of Missouri and Memphis. And that was Missouri prevailing, upset city. 102-91, Missouri defeating Memphis.
And some might argue that it's not an upset just because of Memphis, their record. I mean, they hadn't lost in 2009. They had, you know, their winning streak was, I don't know how many, it was probably 20 or so. But they didn't play anyone. I mean, they played a few, they played like Tennessee in the first part of the season, and Tennessee's not even good. You know, they played a couple other non-conference games, but I just don't think they were prepared. The difference between this team, Memphis, and last year's Memphis is that last year's Memphis, they're out of conference schedule. They played some tough teams, and they had a guy like Derrick Rose that could just carry them through these tough stretches.
Right.
But in the game, I mean, they were losing by 20 early on.
Yeah.
And it's like once you get down in a hole, you
close
don't have
– close it to 6, but that's not even – There's no shot there. So, UConn, Missouri, what are some initial impressions going into this Elite Eight game, which is going to be played tomorrow, I understand?
Now, I honestly don't know much about Missouri. I think they have a guy named Damari Carroll. It was pretty good. But Missouri's just one of those emerging teams. Mike Anderson's the coach. He's tutored under the great Nolan Richardson, this guy who invented 40 Minutes of Hell. You know, this guy who coached Arkansas in 1994, coached them to the national championship in 94. They kind of have the same methodology. They basically just run back and forth, pressure all the time, defense. So they're just a hassle to play. I mean, they might not have as much talent as UConn, but it's going to be rough trying to beat them.
Yeah. So UConn's the favorite there for sure.
Yeah, and I picked UConn in the Final Four, so I'll stay with that.
Uh-huh. And now looking at the other side of the bracket, you had Xavier versus Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh winning 60-55 last night. The other game was Villanova-Duke. And Villanova, maybe not an upset per se over Duke, but winning 77-54, I think that point differential surprised a lot of people.
It wasn't close. It wasn't close the entire game. You know, I knew this was going to happen, but for some reason I wanted to be different, and I picked Duke to go to the Final Four. And I knew that Duke, they have one flaw. If they don't shoot well, they don't win.
They haven't been a good tournament team in a while.
In a while. They haven't won since like 2001. And they've been losing in this Sweet 16 like every year. I mean, last year, two years ago, they lost in the first round, lost to Virginia Commonwealth. And last year, I think they lost in the Sweet 16.
Is this a fault of Coach K? Because like normally when you see a team that has not a lot of postseason success, it goes back to the coach. You saw that in the NFL with the Chargers, Marty Schottenheimer failing to win a couple of playoff games. I mean, Coach K, has he lost it at all? What is the reason that Duke keeps falling before they really haven't been a title contender? And if you were to pick Duke to win it all, people would have raised some eyebrows and be like, are you sure you know what you're talking about?
I think it's the type of players that he's recruiting. I mean, they work hard, but I don't really see the toughness factor, and I don't see, he's not gotten a talented big man since like Elton Brand.
Right.
You know how long ago that was.
That would be the last time Duke won at all.
Yeah. So you just look at the composition of their team. He gets a lot of shooters, a lot of perimeter guys. They spread around the court a lot. Guys like John Shire, they can take the three. I mean, Gerald Henderson, he's a slasher. He can get into the paint, but that's about it. And he's 6'7" or 6'6". There's no big man. There's no tough guy. They need some toughness. And when you look at this team, you see the contrast with a team like Pitt, with a guy like DeJuan Blair. He's just, like, he'd be like the best football player ever. I mean, you just look at his arms, man. But I don't see it. And for the past like four years, you know, Duke's been kind of the same. So
yeah. So Pitt will move on to face Villanova. And do you have any initial impressions of that game?
Villanova better bring it, because those big guys, Sam Young and DeJuan Blair can play. So I'm picking Pitt.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't really matter for me because that bracket's shot. But
so you're taking Pitt and UConn to reach the Final Four.
Yeah.
They're not going to play each other in the Final Four. But,
right.
Some other games going to happen today. Louisville versus Arizona. That's going to be at 7:07 Eastern time. At 7:27 is Oklahoma-Syracuse. Highly anticipated matchup, I'd say. Michigan State versus Kansas and Gonzaga versus North Carolina. A lot of good matchups in this Elite Eight. A lot of top-heavy matchups. Not a lot of upsets so far in this, except Arizona.
Right. So, Louisville-Arizona. Now, Arizona was the last team to get in to the tournament. They're the worst at-large bid, basically. And a lot of people...
Is that your opinion or that's fact?
No, that's fact. This is something that the tournament selection committee basically listed the last teams to get
right.
in. And I think the last two, one was Wisconsin, the other one was Arizona. A lot of people thought Arizona was out because their record, they were 19-13. They had a 500 record in the Pac-10, which is a pretty weak conference this year. But they basically got in on prestige of their program. And the funny thing about them is, out of all the teams, they're probably one of the 10 most talented, teams in the country. Guys like Chase Budinger, he's going to be a lotto pick, maybe around 12 or 13. Jordan Hill is going to be, he's going to be a factor. He'll be a top five pick. He's a power forward, 6'10" guy. Nick Wise, pretty good point guard, pretty good distributor. You look at this team and you compare them to Louisville, really, Arizona is more talented than Louisville. And that's hard to say from like a 12 seed. Compare that to a 1 seed. No, I don't want anything to do with this, but I'm going to pick Louisville. And only because of Pitino's team, his defense. Everything's defense in this tournament.
Yeah.
And I think that they're kind of a swarm type defense, full court press type defense.
Funny you should mention Pitino because we actually... Well, not funny because you were talking about Louisville and he's the coach. But we actually got a question related to Pitino. We're going to get to that right after this brief public service announcement and then station identification. So without further ado, David, take it away.
Tell the CEOs, hands off our internet. Media for Democracy and Free Press will deliver a letter to the CEO of your broadband provider and send copies to your members of Congress, urging them to write network neutrality into law. Act now. We must defend our net freedoms before we lose them altogether. Is an ad brought to you by KWER and the Ad Council.
So again, you're listening to KWER Sports Talk. We're talking sports on KWR 90.3 FM or live online at www.kwur.com. As always, you can our phone system is apparently down right now. So you can email questions to kwursportstalk@gmail.com. That's again, kwursportstalk@gmail.com. And in fact, that's just what one Robert from New York did. So without further ado, I think we should get to his question. Recently, Coach Rick Pitino said that the main difference between a college basketball player and an NBA player is the following. The college player plays for the name on the front of his jersey, that being his team, and the NBA player plays for the name on the back of his jersey, that being the individual. Robert says, do you agree with this comment? If yes, are there any outstanding NBA exceptions that come to mind of people that play, I guess, for their team more so than for their individual?
I agree with that. It's funny because Pitino is kind of talking about his team, Louisville. I know he has Earl Clark is the guy who will get picked in the top 10, but in general, Louisville is a team of no names. In general, Terrence Williams, Earl Clark, Edgar Sosa, they're all really good, but they play well together as a team. It seems like they're playing for the name on the front. You see the same thing at North Carolina with Tyler Hansbrough. This is a guy who is an excellent college player. He has been ever since he stepped onto the Chapel Hill campus. This is a guy who just, the way he plays, he's not all about the flair, the flash and flair of like the NBA players. And you know some of the guys, Thabeat's kind of like that, or he's kind of for himself, and he doesn't always show up for the team. So I do agree with that to a certain extent. You see in
right.
the pros, I think an exception to that rule. I really think Allen Iverson, now people can say whatever they want about his character, but this is a guy, wherever he goes, he says it. He dies for his team.
Yeah.
He dies for, the jersey. And, he doesn't have to, lay himself on the line all the time. He's making millions of dollars, but he does. And I think there are more guys like that than we give credit for. You know, there's kind of the stereotype that the NBA player, all they care about is the cars and the money, and you know, it's the Stephon Marbury's. But yeah, I think they're definitely. Oh yeah, we don't want to talk about that now. But there are definitely some exceptions, and you know, media doesn't really look at that. You know, they kind of paint these players as sort of the rich, greedy guys.
Right. And honestly, I think it's just going to the nature of the business. I met Kurt Thomas in a club in Miami, and I said, Kurt, I loved when you were on the Knicks. Like, you're the man. Are you upset you were traded? And he's like, no, it's the nature of the business. And when you're in the NBA, you know that, like, as much team loyalty as you want to have, when you're in college, you know that's the only college you'll ever play for. If you're on Duke, you can love Duke and you can hate UNC, and you can live by that. But if you're in the NBA, all you know is that you're going to exist and that you have to fight for yourself to keep trying to get new contracts and whatever team it's with. So I think you really see the selflessness for players that have already established their names and kind of know that they're going to be on the same team, or know that they're going to be able to play for a team if they want to for the future. Like Allen Iverson, where he can really go and he doesn't really care about building prestige to his name anymore. You know, like a Kobe Bryant, for example, who right now, if you were to say Kobe, you can either score 30 points a game and have the Lakers lose in the first round of the playoffs, or you can sit the bench and maybe score 10 points a game and you win the title. He would choose the second thing every time because
he'd somehow still score 30 points off the bench.
He would score 30 points in 10 minutes.
But yeah, I see where you're going with that. And you look at I have a football example, Chris Cooley. Now, there's, I guess, some false rumors that came out a couple weeks ago that he was going to be shipped off with Jason Campbell to Cleveland for in this trade involving Brady Quinn and Jay Cutler, a three-way trade. Now, Chris Cooley, you know, you can kind of tell that he's playing for the team on the front of the jersey because he's like, man, I'd get pissed, you know, if I got shipped off to Cleveland.
Right.
And it wasn't meant as a backhanded slap to Cleveland, though
right.
He probably... probably was a little
probably,
bit, but
to a degree.
But he said he basically had a follow up statement that said, you know, if I were shipped there, if I were shipped to Denver or, you know, Dallas or wherever, I'd still be mad because, you know, this is a place where I love and I want to be here for a long time.
Right, and he hates the Cowboys and he hates the Giants, and that's what he wants. Yeah, he wants to continue that, and that brings back an interesting point. Jay Cutler, someone that a lot of people think is a very selfish player in a lot of respects. He didn't want to be traded because he wants to, I don't know, what do you think, how would you tie in the Cutler situation? Because he didn't want to leave Denver, but do you think it was, I don't know, do you think it was personal motivation or do you think
that it's all about him and the coach. I think him and Josh McDaniels. McDaniels is coming from the Belichick tree, and we all know that the Belichick tree, they're not very good people, they're not people person. Or people.
Not people.
Like, he's not a people person. I'll just say that. But that's just a rift between those two players. I think that with Cutler, it's a little different because he's kind of whining a little bit. And so, I mean, it's almost like he doesn't want to leave because he's got a family. He's thinking about himself. I mean,
personal stuff.
Yeah,
it's that he has a house there. It's not that he's committed to the Broncos organization.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he's committed because he would go somewhere else. Say he went to Cleveland, he would go there and he'd move his family there and then he'd play and be a Pro Bowl quarterback for my Browns.
Yeah, he's all about the cha-ching.
Yeah.
But back to Rob's question, I think we both agree with that statement then, and I just think it's the nature of the business that when you're in college, you won't play for another college no matter what. You can give it your all. And you can be fully devoted to a team. And you see that even in Division III basketball when I like to talk about the fact that Division III basketball is the only time when you know that a freshman's going to be there for all 4 years, barring injury. He's not going to go pro early. He's not going to he could transfer feasibly. But when you're a Division III player, you can be as selfless as possible because there's no personal prestige in it at all.
Yeah, and it's great to, especially when you start – you know, when you're a freshman, you start with the freshman, you see them progress on the basketball team and see what they are today. You kind of feel connected to them. You say, man, we both came in at the same time, both high school, class of 06, you know, class of 2010. You see what he's doing, you know, from freshman year. Guys like Aaron Thompson, you know, they're not playing, they're not making as significant an impact. And then you see how they grow as a sophomore, and then as a junior and senior, you know, he's probably going to be one of the best players in Division III basketball. So, you know, I do kind of like that selflessness. But, yeah, do you want to get back to the brackets? Finish this out?
Yeah. Let's finish out Division I. So we talked about Louisville, Arizona. Who are you picking in this game?
I'm picking Louisville, but Arizona's better. More talented, but not better.
That's what I mean. I hear you. Say you were to bet on – there are four games tonight. Say you were to bet on two of them. You would choose to sit this one out?
I'd sit this one out. I'd pick the Oklahoma and –
all right, let's talk about Oklahoma-Syracuse is the next game, 7:27 Eastern. Blake Griffin and the Sooners going up against Jim Boeheim's Orange.
Orange.
They're going up against the Orange. So, Oklahoma-Syracuse, what are your impressions of this game, David? Division I expert.
Now, I had a theory that kind of backfired on me last week that I was picking teams with NBA-type players, you know, guys that had potential to be NBA superstar or stars one day, would go pretty far in this tournament. And I had three teams. I'm blanking on one of them, but Arizona State was one of mine. Picked them in the Elite Eight. They lost in the second round because they got a guy, James Harden. He's going to be a top five pick, a shooting guard, and he's a very versatile guy.
Yeah.
Then you had Arizona's a team that they have a lot of NBA-type talent. Oklahoma's a team. Now, when you have something like that, I think back to 2003 with Carmelo Anthony when he won. You know, this is a team that didn't have that much talent around. I mean, they had Jerry McNamara, and they
Hakeem
had
Mark.
Okay, I'm wrong there. They had Jerry McNamara and Hakeem Mark, but they weren't as good as some of the teams. But what they did have was they had a catalyst, a guy that could score 30 points in a game. This is what I see with Oklahoma. They have a guy who will get picked as a lottery pick in addition to Blake Griffin. But you know, when you have a guy that can put up 30 and 20 like nothing, I mean, I'm going to pick that team.
20 rebounds.
I'm going to pick that team. And Syracuse, they have a big man, Paul Harris, but he can't compete with Blake Griffin.
Is this the theory? You said you have this theory for this tournament. Is this a theory that you've tested through other tournaments, or why do you? Why now? Or do you always think this?
It
worked out?
I don't always think this, but sometimes I think in the tournament it brings out – it's a platform for the NBA. You see the teams that go the furthest. You look at Kansas last year. Their players will inevitably get drafted a little bit higher than they normally would. So a guy like Mario Chalmers, who was kind of like a fringe first or second rounder, he got drafted higher, you know, 5-10 spots higher than he normally would have. You know, if it had not been for his tournament. So it's just a great national platform for these guys to distinguish themselves from other prospects.
So the Arizona State pick falls through. But what about your Oklahoma pick? Are you taking Blake Griffin and the Sooners in this one?
Yeah. No doubt.
So this is one of those games you would bet on?
Yes.
If you had to bet on one game out of these four, which one would it be?
What's the other one?
So the games again, Louisville, Arizona, Syracuse, Oklahoma, Kansas, Michigan State, and Gonzaga, UNC.
That or UNC. I think Gonzaga's really talented, but I would never pick them. I'm just, as a fan of UNC, I would never pick them.
Do you think that UNC has the distinct edge in this matchup?
Not really. I mean, they have some holes in their team. Wayne Ellington, the shooting guard, he can kind of be a ghost at times. Tyler Hansbrough, doesn't seem like he's getting... over the years, he hasn't gotten much better, and sometimes he puts up his numbers, but he doesn't really have that impact that you see in your superstar players. And Ty Lawson is basically on him. You know, if he doesn't have a good game, they're not going to win.
Right.
So.
But you're taking UNC in that one?
Yeah.
And then the final matchup being Michigan State versus Kansas. Michigan State, the top rebounding team in the nation.
Honestly,
Tom Izzo always has his teams go far in the...
I have no idea, so I'll go ahead and pick Kansas just because I have them in my bracket.
Okay. See, I would go with Michigan State with this. Again, I don't know all that much about Division I. I just know that Tom Izzo, if Michigan State makes it out of the first round, they always go to the Final Four. That's what I've seen.
And there's also another statistic that every class that Tom Izzo's had since, like, the 90s, every class has had a Final Four appearance, and this is the fourth year. So there are some seniors that have not been. I think Travis Walton, one of their guards, is a senior, and he's not been to a Final Four. It's his turn to kind of go to the Final Four. So I don't know if that will hold true, but you know, classes for as long as I can count have been the Final Four. So,
and again, if Michigan State does win, it's Louisville, Arizona, and they're going to play the winner of Michigan State and Kansas, and then in the other half, it's going to be Syracuse, Oklahoma. winner is going to take on the winner of UNC Gonzaga. So a flurry of action going on in Division I basketball, right in the thick of it in between game days. So again, that starts again tonight at 7 Eastern. And I guess I'll start focusing on Division I, seeing as my passion of Division III is now done.
We have a sad vacation from Division III basketball for a little bit, but it'll get back started in October, November, so I'll be okay.
I don't know. I don't know if or I'll December. Be okay between now and the NFL draft. I don't know what I'm
going
to do with
myself. Oh, yeah. Are you going this year?
I don't know. I mean, the NFL draft happens during the school year, so I probably won't be able to go. I don't know. But I am very excited for the NFL draft. Maybe we'll have a special NFL draft edition. Probably next week we'll talk a lot more about Final Four predictions and all whatnot. But
and I think all three of us will be back.
And all three of us will be here next week.
I may have a special guest. We'll see about that.
Oh, a special guest.
We'll see about that. We'll see about that one.
The suspense is killing me.
It's getting hot in here.
So we talked about Division III basketball, Division I basketball. Didn't really get to a lot of topics. Covered these small ones in depth. But, I mean, that's we're talking sports.
I love it. Gotta love it.
Seriously, thanks for joining us again every Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 to 2 p.m. Central. But that's going to do it for us here in the studio. Again, KWIR 90.3 FM, we're talking sports. It was a pleasure bringing you Bears coverage all season for Division III. Again, men and women, men winning it all, women coming in second, which is a phenomenal finish. We're going to work on those, getting fans in.
We're going to work on it, but we'll do our part here for 1 hour every week, and hope to see you all next Friday.
Yeah. So, again, tune in next Friday, 1 o'clock. Hopefully the phones will be working then. Hopefully we'll get some more email questions. Get to talk about a lot of different topics. We'll have Tim here to provide a fresh perspective and a fresh voice. But until now,
I'm David.
I'm Jeff, and thanks for joining us on We're Talking Sports. We'll see you next week.